welcome to NC Spin, an unrehearsed discussion about issues of interest to North Carolina. Now here's the host of NC Spin, Tom Campbell.
Thank you for joining this week's NC Spin. The top story of the week is the easing of stay-home restrictions, and we're going to talk about what's open, what's not, and how it impacts you. We'll review the legislation passed to help deal with the virus, and if there's time, we want to talk about more money problems at DOT. But of course, the panel is going to tell us something we don't know. Joining us on this week's panel are Peg O'Connell, communications consultant and political analyst, John Hood, syndicated columnist and author, and by Skype, we have Leo Daughtry, former state senator and member of the UNC Board of Governors, and Chris Fitzsimon, director of the state's newsroom. We'll begin our uninterrupted discussion after these brief messages from our underwriters.
The big issue in 2020 is healthcare. Let's talk basics. You are the key to your own personal health, but there is strong evidence that if you have a relationship with a family physician, your quality of life will be better. You'll likely live longer, and you'll have 33% lower healthcare costs. Your family doctor knows you, has your medical history, and can quickly diagnose health problems. Family Physicians, your trusted healthcare advisor for life.
Today's tools make you a real DIYer, and as a member of an electric cooperative, you have lots of valuable tools to help you do it yourself in controlling your home energy use and budget, leaving you free to be dad.
If you think you may have COVID-19, please remember, people who are mildly ill are able to recover at home. If possible, stay in a specific sick room and stay in touch with your doctor. Be sure to seek medical care right away if your symptoms become severe, like difficulty breathing. Most important, whether you have mild symptoms or no symptoms, we should all stay home to prevent the spread of the coronavirus.
Government plays a key role in your life, affecting your paycheck, the way you educate your kids, the way you do business. How can you tell if government is doing a good job, making the right choices, spending tax dollars wisely? CarolinaJournal.com tackles those questions every day. The John Locke Foundation publishes Carolina Journal in print each month and on the web each day at CarolinaJournal.com. You'll find exclusive investigative reports on topics no one else is covering. What else? A rundown of the best news stories, editorials, and opinion columns in North Carolina. John Hood's Daily Journal. News stories and important public events at CarolinaJournal.tv. And the voices of the newsmakers themselves at Carolina Journal Radio. In print, on the air, and on the web, you can find the information you need at CarolinaJournal.com.
We now return to NC Spin.
Before we begin this week, we want to acknowledge the death of Tony Rand, longtime Fayetteville legislator and powerful Senate Rules Chair. We send condolences to his wife and family wish them our best during this time. Let's begin the spin. On Tuesday, Governor Cooper announced that he was easing the restrictions in North Carolina and that we were moving into phase one of the COVID-19 virus situation until May 22nd. He calls this a modified stay-home plan, with many businesses reopening and people having more freedom to move about. We want to talk to the panel about what you can expect. I want to ask each of you, beginning with Peg O'Connell. The governor said people had done a good job of staying home and flattening the curve of the COVID-19 virus. The data indicated we could ease into more normal activities. What do you think of the governor's plan, Peg?
Well, you know, Tom, I think what this does is it lays out a pathway for us. We have been diligent in North Carolina to abide by the governor. Most of us have been diligent to abide by the governor's orders to keep us safe. And I think this is a good reintroduction into a more normal society. You know, as everyone's saying, the new normal is not going to be the same as what we are used to, and it's going to take a long time before that happens.
John Hood, what do you think of the plan?
Well, I wish it was more expeditious. I think that the governor's plan is overly cautious. but it is necessary. It's absolutely necessary. The unemployment rate in North Carolina is probably, when we find out for April soon, within the next couple of weeks, it's probably going to be upwards of 15%. The underemployment rate will get us into the 20s. This is getting us to the 30s. This is basically Great Depression territory.
Right.
And we all knew, surely, that stay at home to flatten the curve was a short-term thing. It has to be. The alternative is impossible. So I think the governor was wise to proceed with phase one. I just wish that phase one was more expansive. I think we should have opened more businesses in phase one than the governor proposes.
Chris Fitzsimon, what do you think of the governor's plan?
Well, I think it is a mixed bag, like our entire response to this pandemic. You know, there are a couple things about it. One is we are still largely, with some variations, following what the Trump White House originally laid out in their phase one, phase two, phase three. Many states are reopening despite not meeting those benchmarks, are reopening faster. I just noticed today I saw some data that showed, of all places, Wilkes County is now in the top 10 counties in coronavirus cases per capita because of a meat plant there. Those workers, whether they're infected at home or at the plant, go home and go back into the community. So we have to be extra careful. This is a really tough call for all the politicians. I'm a little alarmed at folks calling for we're going to talk about the protests maybe in the next segment, but calling for a wide-scale immediate reopening of everything. And the final point I always find fascinating is there's a big now somehow partisan divide about wearing masks. And I think people are missing a vital point. You're not wearing a mask to protect yourself. You're wearing a mask to protect other people. And I think that's a key part of this reopening process, is figuring out where those should be required. And finally, the polls overwhelmingly show the public is worrying, while they're at the same time worrying about their jobs, they're worrying about reopening too quickly. So it's going to be interesting to see, as businesses do reopen, who's going to show up to those businesses, because if they don't feel safe, they're not going to come, whether they're open or not.
Leo Daughtry, what's your reaction to the governor's announcement?
Tom, when we first heard about the virus, I think everybody was afraid for themselves and for their family. And now, after this period of time, we are now afraid, most people are afraid, that they don't have their job. They can't support their family. They may have lost their business, and the fear of the economic situation is now greater than the fear of the virus. And people are going to go back to work, and I just hope it's not a thing that's going to be so bad, but people are definitely ready to go back to work, and they want to go back to work. And this, if you slow them down, it's going to make them very nervous and more afraid.
Yeah, I told the secretary when I interviewed her on Wednesday night on UNC TV, we are so over this virus. And she said, I know that, but we got a ways to go yet. Peg, once again this week we saw protesters from the Reopen NC movement. There weren't as many as there had been in weeks past. There was also an opposition group that supported the stay-home orders. Reopen leaders say they plan to become a nonprofit organization and raise money for legal action. I guess my question is, on what grounds could they potentially sue the governor or the state?
Well, you know, this will be some interesting territory. The founder of that group, I think her name's Ashley Smith, she said that she wants to sue in a class action habeas corpus. I think what she means is a class action and obtain a writ of habeas corpus. And for those of you who remember your constitutional history, habeas corpus means you have the body. So it is a writ of inquiry, actually, that says, are people being detained involuntarily appropriately? So what I'm wondering is, I don't think people are being detained in the broad sense. I mean, we are being asked to be restricted. We are asked to be smart. But I don't think there's anybody's involuntarily imprisoned in all this. So I'm wondering what kind of grounds they'll proceed on. But they'll have to kind of get in line, because there's a number of people lining up to sue the governor for his executive orders. So it'll just be another full employment for lawyer season.
It's a class two misdemeanor I think if you violate the stay home orders or even the modified stay home orders. But the vast majority, John, back to what you were talking about before, the vast majority of people and businesses can reopen. The ones who can't, obviously, are like hairstylists and barbers and masseurs and nail salons and so forth like that, where you can't keep any kind of reasonable distances. I guess my question is, and the businesses that are reopened now can have 50% of their capacity in the store or in the business at one time. Is this going to help restart the economy? Some say we shouldn't just willy-nilly go full force to try to open it up again anyway. We need a gradual restart. Will this do that?
Well, I'm one of those who would agree that we need a gradual restart. You need capacity limits. You need requirements for protection, for masks and other protections in certain kinds of businesses. But I think we should have followed the guidance, in this case, from the Trump administration and from other states that moved in phase one into restaurants and personal care services. That was the guidance from the federal government. It is the guidance that a lot of other states and other countries are following. If we do that 2 weeks from now or 3 weeks from now, let's just all be understanding, the virus is not going to be gone. It's not going to be gone for months
no,
from
that's
now.
That's true, yeah.
And so this is simply a question of where are we going to get to and how quickly we get to a point where we can take the economic hit that is ongoing, because we cannot simply restore the economic damage that's been done overnight. It can't be done. Chris is right about customers are going to be cautious. Some customers are going to be cautious. I am cautious of poll numbers because I think, as we've known before, that polling and people's behavior are two different things. But I think we need to get to the point that other places are getting to now and that the governor's plan will get to about a month from now. And that's what I mean. I just think it's too slow. And remember, every single day costs North Carolina's economy. It reduces our production by hundreds of millions of dollars. It is not, well, it's just another few weeks. That is a very costly delay.
Yeah, Leo, there are some people who are suggesting that maybe we ought to have different kinds of ways of applying this. For instance, in the rural areas of North Carolina, many of these rural counties don't have many cases and have had very few deaths. And perhaps maybe we should loosen the restrictions on these rural counties. What do you think of that idea?
Well, I think it's got merit, but I don't know how you would enforce it. You know, people, if you're going to be doing business in Johnston County, then somebody in Harney County would want to do business also. It's going to be difficult to enforce, and trying to let one area do something that another area can't is more difficult. So I think we ought to do it statewide. It would be my opinion.
Chris, one of the things that I think is most alarming to us as we look at the more than 500 deaths that we've had since this virus began is that something like 45% of those deaths are coming from nursing homes or long-term care facilities and so forth like that. This has been certainly a big news. I personally have a mother who is in one, and so I'm very concerned about this. Are we doing enough insofar as long-term care facilities, or can we do much more?
Well, I hope we can do much more. I mean, I think we have to do all we can. I do think, though, that we should, that the all governors, not just our governor, has been a little slow to release the names and the location of these nursing homes and rest homes. I think that should be public information, as well as the food processing plants where we have outbreaks. But I don't think we're doing enough. We have to be vigilant. We have to have standards. We need to make sure these places, the workers are protected, the residents are protected. It's a very tricky line. You know, this is a time when government has to play a significant role in keeping people safe. I'm not sure that we have done that enough. I think we're on the right track. But as you mentioned, nursing homes, rest homes, and I'm still worried about food processing plants. I think that's another big aspect of this. We just mentioned rural North Carolina. I mentioned Wilkes County. There, most of the food processing plants, of poultry plants, are in rural areas. And those people are also at danger. We need to make sure those are safe workplaces.
Peg, is this becoming another a political event? I mean, it seems like the people who are saying we need to be more cautious, urge more safe safety precautions and so forth like that tend to be Democrats, people who are pushing more toward, we need to open up more, we need to just throw the doors open, tend to be more Republican. Is this turning into a political slugfest?
Well, unfortunately, I thought when this came about that we would unify, and I think we did for a short period of time, but our society is so splintered that even the idea of, as Chris mentioned, people wearing masks is become some sort of a political issue, and it shouldn't be. I mean, we saw what happened in large cities in the Northeast and in the Midwest. And because of the quick action of Dr. Cohen and Governor Cooper, we are not facing that in North Carolina, at least not yet. And so this deliberate step forward realizes that we can't stay like this forever, but it also allows us to be smart. We don't want to see those spikes and see our emergency rooms and our ICUs overwhelmed. And that's what this is all about.
So the secretary and the governor have come up with the three W's: wear, wait, and wash. Wear your mask when you're outside. Wait 6 feet apart from other people, and wash your hands frequently and disinfect surfaces. John, to Peg's point, will people follow that?
Yes, I think most people will. I think they will increasingly follow it, particularly when those and of course, none of those for individuals is a government mandate. Even the mask wearing thing in the phase is a recommendation, but it is a recommendation people should take. And they should realize that the more they do these common sense things, the more freedoms we will have. We will have churches resume operation. We will have restaurants. We will have movie theaters. We will have these things happen at some point if people act responsibly. It's not inconsistent. In fact, if you look at the countries, for example, in East Asia, that were able to constrain the growth of the virus at the early stages and then more or less tamp it down, mask wearing is ubiquitous. Other kinds of rules, temperature checks going into workplaces in Germany happened very early. It's why Germany's had a better experience, relatively speaking, than most of Europe. It isn't because they had more strict government regulations, actually. It's because they had a much quicker social, including business adoption of temperature checks and other and lots of sort of best practices in workplaces. If we want to recover our personal and religious and economic freedoms, we're going to have to do it smart.
We've got to act responsibly. That's a good point on which to end this particular segment.
Wait a minute. I have one thing to say. I just want the record to note that I agree with John Hood.
I hereby change my position.
North Carolina was given $3.5 billion from the Federal CARES Act, and our legislature acted last week to allocate those funds. Last Saturday, lawmakers passed and the governor has signed into law funding for about $1.6 billion. While there were differences between the two houses, there was a good spirit of cooperation between the parties, the House, the Senate, and the governor. We want our panel to discuss what passed and what didn't. Leo Daughtry, let's start here. The big difference was the House was vocal in saying they wanted to go ahead and put all this money out to help the people as quickly as possible. The Senate had a philosophy that was more restrained, saying this was only the first flow of funds and more legislation would be passed. They ended up with an amount that was smaller than what the House wanted, larger than what the Senate proposed. Between the two philosophies, which do you think is best?
Well, it's hard to say, but I can tell you to start out the conversation, the Senate is not going to spend as much money on the budget as the House does. The House's budget came out at $1.7 billion, and the Senate's budget was $1.2 billion.
Yeah.
When they started looking at the House budget, they saw that about $125 million was money that was going to be used to refund students for meal tickets and other things. And the U.S. Treasurer said that money could not be used for that purpose. So that money came off the top. Then the House wanted to expand Medicaid, limit expansion, but at least expand it. And the House did not want to do that. And lastly, the Senate did not want to spend any of this money as recurring money.
Yeah.
They wanted to use this money as one-time money.
Chris, let's talk about this. Yeah, let's talk about this Medicaid expansion business. What the House was proposing was a temporary expansion of Medicaid for people who met certain income threshold levels so that they could be tested and treated for COVID-19. The Senate didn't want to go along with that, so it did not end up in the final bill. Why?
Well, I suppose because of a philosophical objection to Medicaid expansion at all. I was startled to see this. Think about what this means. All these people who have, are now unemployed, many of them single adults, who have no health care coverage, who need a coronavirus test, and then if they're found that they're positive or, God forbid, they get sick, how are they going to literally pay the bills to be treated with this pandemic? They'll be less likely to go to the hospital if they need to. I think this was very short-sighted. This wasn't the broad expansion of Medicaid that a lot of people, including me, think is a good idea. I know PEG does too. This was a specific response to a natural health disaster, a pandemic, over which most people have no control. They had no control over losing their jobs. I'm just wondering what happens to people now when they need treatment for coronavirus and they can't afford
it. Senator Berger said that they were increasing the amount of money that they were going to give to fund the hospitals so that hospitals could treat them. Is that sufficient, John?
That's the debate. The debate here is not whether to spend public dollars for the purposes Chris said. It's whether to do it through a Medicaid expansion, albeit a temporary one, or by direct funding of the health providers in question. The Senate argued that I think probably because of the precedential idea, the idea of creating a precedent for Medicaid expansion in the long run, that it would be better to fund the providers directly so that they can provide these services to patients. And that's what the state ended up doing. It was not a question of, there's no longer going to be tests or treatment in the hospital if you get COVID-19. That's not what the debate was about.
Yeah,
it was about whether to do it through Medicaid expansion or through direct payments.
One other aspect of this that was proposed by the Senate that got kicked out, the Senate was going to increase the unemployment payments that people could receive from $350 to $400 a week in concert with the federal unemployment funds. But so far as it goes, we have what is known as one of the stingiest unemployment programs, certainly in the Southeast, and one of the stingiest. Why did this get kicked out? Any explanation for this?
Well, I think it was a question of the Chamber of Commerce didn't want it. And what the Chamber of Commerce wants, it usually gets. And I think, you know, to Chris's point, there's a lot packed into this legislation, but the two major things that sort of tear at my heart, and I think a lot of other people's, was the failure to open up the Medicaid program for testing and treatment, and then this drop in the ball on increasing unemployment benefits.
I got about 2 minutes left in this segment. Any other big items in this legislation that either got included or didn't get included? Leo?
Well, I thought it was very appropriate to grant money to the universities for the purpose of trying to work on a cure for this virus. I know that you at Duke and Wake Forest and other colleges got large amounts of money, and I thought that was great. But the main thing is, you can be critical one way or the other, but every single person in both the House and the Senate not only voted for the bill, they all praised it. So at least they came to a point where politics was not so involved in this particular bill.
Yeah, I think that there's no question about it. There was some unanimity here that we haven't seen in a while, and the governor was involved in this process also. I got about 20 seconds left. Anybody else want to add something that was left?
Well, I just want to say real quick, the federal government has constrained the states too much in spending this money. The most important thing states can do, and it's odd for a conservative, I guess, to say this, the most important thing state governments like North Carolina need to do is preserve public services going forward over the next months and years, given the revenue crunch that is inevitably coming.
And that's something they
ought to be able to use these dollars to do in a short
and Attorney General Josh Stein has stepped in and joined 24 other attorneys general across the United States to get the feds to give better definition to some of these. Speaking of definitions, it's time for me to get you to give us a definition of something we don't know. Chris Fitzsimon?
Well, we didn't have time to talk about the DOT audit and the controversy that engendered around the state. I wanted to just raise one. Bruce Seisloff.
I got 2 minutes left in show, Chris. We got to hit it hard.
Well, the DOT, the audit didn't mention the MAP Act. DOT has spent $600 million to fulfill MAP Act claims. That's a big part of their problem.
Okay. Leo Daltrey, tell us something we don't know.
You talked about that Tony Rand and what kind of fella he was. You know, he was really one of the strongest Democrats I ever had contact with. But at the same time, if there was a good bill, he didn't care whether a Democrat had it or a Republican had it. He was on board, and he was just great to work with.
He was quite a force.
He was really a great North Carolinian and did so much good.
Peg O'Connell, tell us something we don't know.
Well, we are in five different places, and I have to tell you, doing this show like this is just weird.
I think that's something all of us know. I'm not sure about the audience. Okay, John, tell us something we don't know.
Health providers, hospitals, doctor's offices are going to be very, very busy this summer and fall, even if the COVID-19 thing doesn't get any worse because of all the deferred medical services that have occurred in the last several weeks. It's not a consequence of the shutdown. It's a consequence of just people being afraid of going to the doctor.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a very significant effect, in some cases, a heart-rending effect on people's health other than the virus.
Well, the hospitals are opening up for elective surgeries, and maybe we can begin that flow anyway. Well, you've heard our spin on the issues of the day to stay informed all during the week. Sign up for our free weekly email newsletter, give your feedback, and read my weekly column. Visit our website, ncspin.com, or catch NCSpin on Facebook. While there, be sure to subscribe to our weekly newsletter. Until then, stay informed and watch out for the spin.
The big issue in 2020 is healthcare. Let's talk basics. You are the key to your own personal health, but there is strong evidence that if you have a relationship with a family physician, your quality of life will be better, you'll likely live longer, and you'll have 33% lower healthcare costs. Your family doctor knows you, has your medical history, and can quickly diagnose health problems. Family physicians, your trusted healthcare advisor for life.
Today's tools make you a real DIYer, and as a member of an electric cooperative, you have lots of valuable tools to help you do it yourself in controlling your home energy use and budget, leaving you free to be dad.
If you think you may have COVID-19, please remember, people who are mildly ill are able to recover at home. If possible, stay in a specific sick room and stay in touch with your doctor. Be sure to seek medical care right away if your symptoms become severe, like difficulty breathing. Most important, whether you have mild symptoms or no symptoms, we should all stay home to prevent the spread of the coronavirus.
Join us next week and get the spin on issues facing our state. For more information or to learn how to contact us, visit our website, ncspin.com. NC Spin is a copyrighted production of Carolina Broadcasting System, Incorporated.